You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Coming up on show 520, it's a deep dive into the technology that makes our electric vehicles tick. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to the show. It's EV News Daily for Saturday, 6th of July. Today, my name is Martin Lee, and delighted to bring you this Saturday special from someone who's making a return to the podcast. It's Ryan Maughan from Avid Technology, a UK technology company that's been at the heart of the EV and hybrid industry for many, many years now. They work with so many different manufacturers that actually, in many cases, Ryan can't talk about the work they're doing for specific car makers, truck makers, and all those kind of things. They can, in some cases, use specific examples where they're allowed to. But the thing that I love about this is because, well, Ryan is making the technology that goes under the skin of EVs, and you may never know that you're using his technology in an EV, in a vehicle, in a truck, in a commercial vehicle, in a bus or something. And so, because Avid Technology won't be beating the drum for one particular car maker or manufacturer, they can remain agnostic when it comes to technology. So one of the things that I've always wanted to do with this podcast is try and make it a resource for us all learning more. One of the great things about the way we communicate now, the internet, and the ability to share information and share knowledge is something that I've always thought, well, how can we connect all those bits up with the community? So persuaded Ryan to come on today, but also to come back. I mean, hopefully something like once a month where we can ask him your questions about EV technology, where we've come from, what he's developing, what he's working on now, where we're going to be going in the future, 1, 3, 5, 10 years in the future. So I'm really excited about this and working with Avid Technology as a new strand on the podcast, which we will call Ask Avid. There is nothing that they don't know about EVs, having been at the heart of the industry. Him and his team at Avid Technology and understanding and oversight of the EV industry more than anyone that I've ever met. And of all the people that I've talked with this podcast, they just seem to have this wonderful platform agnostic or manufacturer agnostic. So they're not on the side of any one company in particular. They work with everybody. And so we're going to talk about on the podcast today things like, what are the bits that go under the skin of an EV? How we electrify motorsport? How we develop electric powertrains for established car makers? We talk a lot about Tesla, but how do those companies that are all invested in fossil engines make that pivot to electric technology? Because we want them to. We want as many people making EVs as possible. That, many more things, talking about advising government ministers on EV technology. So much to discuss today when we caught up at a very historical building in the heart of London. Down in the basement, funnily enough, so had to turn off the air conditioning, had to turn off the fan, otherwise it would pick it up on the microphones. So we have to turn all those kind of things off when recording for half an hour, which meant it was a bit of a sweaty and stinky hot summer's day interview. But I think you will like this. Have a listen. EV News Daily once again on location today, and we're in a fantastic building, a wonderfully old historic building in the centre of London, but we're down in the basement right now. A few of the London noises outside, I don't know if you'll get to hear them during the interview, but today we're sitting down with a former guest of this podcast. I was trying to work out, I don't think anybody's come back for a second bite of the cherry, so he must be a glutton for punishment, and indeed a podcaster himself, but that's really not his main business. From Avid Technology, Ryan Morn. Welcome back to EV News Daily.
Thanks very much, Martin.
And it's good to have you back on the podcast today. And it's actually good to be kind of working with you more, because we've been talking over, well, for as long as we've been, you know, kind of talking really about ways to educate people. And so this is what we're going to talk about on today's interview and how we can kind of raise the tide, really. But let's go back to the beginning. Avid Technology, tell us, give us kind of the elevator pitch for, not for the long time listeners of the podcast, for those that didn't hear your first time round.
Okay, so Avid, I set the company up back in 2004-2005 with the mission to basically make vehicles more sustainable. So I thought, okay, two big challenges of our time, air quality and climate change, and I really wanted to do something about that. I think I was trying to ease a guilty conscience of sort of 10 or so years spent in motorsport. So we've done vehicle electrification and controls since then. Obviously, electric vehicles were not fashionable. It's kind of pre-Tesla back then. I don't know if they're fashionable now, even in some quarters, but they definitely weren't then. So it's been a bit of a tough time. But we've built up a really good business up in the northeast of England. We supply electric vehicle powertrain components for heavy duty, so trucks and buses and construction machinery off highway, and high performance, so dealing with high performance vehicle manufacturers, so sports cars and supercars and things like that. And you know, not really doing kind of mainstream EVs, but doing these very large, very powerful systems for kind of difficult to do vehicles. That's what we specialize in.
And one of the things that came out of when we spoke the first time and we had you on as a guest on the podcast is the nature of your business is we can't really ask you about, or you can't talk about, the specifics of the companies you work with, because some of them might be in kind of competition, or it's a secret kind of industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the nature of the work that we've done is that's gone from being real sort of exploratory programs a few years ago to now it's production intent, and the design cycle, it can be up to 5 years on a vehicle. So people don't want their competitors to know what is coming and what they're working on. So quite often in some cases we've even got confidentiality agreements about confidentiality agreements. So we have some customers where we can't even tell you we have a confidentiality agreement with them because that's confidential.
Yes.
In some cases we can talk about them though, and those projects tend to be ones where well, sometimes the customer's a bit more open-minded about it, which that helps.
Yeah.
But in other cases, we've done quite a bit of stuff with bodies in the UK that have funded research, like the Advanced Propulsion Centre and the IDP. And in those programmes, they basically want us to talk about our collaborations with manufacturers, and they essentially tell the manufacturers they have to talk about what they're doing. So we do talk about some of our projects, so people will see that, some collaborations with Jaguar Land Rover and Caterpillar and things like that. But they tend to be funded projects. But they're the ones that we're allowed to talk about. There's so much other stuff going on in the background that we're not allowed to talk about.
Let's talk about Caterpillar, because it's one that I read a press release about it lately. It made the news, the local press, the national press as well. And so that is something that we can talk about because it was out in the public domain. So Caterpillar is, for those listening, what would you say, heavy industrial machinery?
So Caterpillar is the world's number one, by quite a long way, construction equipment and mining equipment manufacturer. So they make the your classic yellow goods, your diggers, your bulldozers, your excavators on building sites and in mines and quarries around the world. But they're the number one by a long shot.
Big diesel vehicles. Why are they working with you, the leading experts in electrification?
So there's two things. So with CAT, we have several projects running. And really, I think there's two drivers in that industry as a whole. On one hand, the big diesels, so you're absolutely right, but these things work really hard. So in some cases, they're using like 50, 60, 70 litres of fuel an hour. And if you can save a small amount of that. Yeah. Actually, that's a massive financial return and a huge CO2 benefit for the users, which is becoming increasingly important. So there's a big drive in that industry to improve the efficiency of the product. So that's one driver. The other driver is in a lot of cities, from 2025 onwards, you're not going to be able to use diesel-engined vehicles at all. And that includes construction equipment, so things working on building sites. Indoor air quality regs have tightened up. So if the machines are going inside buildings or in recycling centers or in environments where they go indoors, it's also really, really difficult. So for those applications, manufacturers are looking to fully electric machines. So there's a lot of work happening around that as well. So two drivers in that industry, and CAR doing, they're all over it, basically, as you'd expect, being the biggest in the world.
That's really interesting, actually, about the whole marginal gains thing, because it's not a binary thing. It's not like run it on diesel or just run it on electric. We did a story on the podcast recently about hybrid ships that actually the battery power can operate in places that the engines would be at their least efficient, and then when the engines can run at efficient revs, maybe then it can the fossil fuels can take over. So that's a lot of people, myself included, would find that interesting, that it's not an either or decision.
We need to reduce CO2 emissions. We need to do it now. So in a lot of cases, you've got applications where full battery electric just wouldn't work. Fuel cell is basically too expensive. It's not economically viable. Mm. And in those cases, well, should we just sit on our hands and do nothing because the perfect solution isn't available? Or should we do something? And doing something, in my view, is much better than doing nothing. to be honest, that's our business. So, yeah, it should be. But the being able to do it in a way which delivers a benefit in terms of a fuel saving in those industrial applications, you know, that's a win-win. So those win-wins actually are really important. And, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, it was still a really tough sell. But I think the whole profile of electrification and hybridization has got to such a level now where people get it. We don't have to prove the concept. You wouldn't believe this, but 5 or 6 years ago, we were literally proving the concept to people that a hybrid would give them a fuel saving. Mm. Like that was a big thing, right? But now everyone gets that. We know how hybrids work. We see them all the time. We're not scared of them anymore. So why not? You know, and if we can deliver a cost-effective fuel saving in a big industrial application, then yeah, no brainer. Let's get it done.
And you also do high. This isn't just about industrial machinery. You mentioned at the start that you also work on high performance machines as well, and that tends to be the sexy end, the bit that is going to get almost like the headlines or people excited, you know, although it shouldn't, but it is, you know, that is the bit that does probably the good PR, you know, much like Tesla's 0-60 time, that does the good PR for EVs, almost like the high power stuff.
So the high performance vehicles, I think a couple of years ago people realized, I think McLaren P1 was probably the first one that was like really in the big public domain, and obviously the Top Gear guys got hold of it. They loved the thing, and people went, hang on, this is a hybrid and it goes like, you know, what's it? It's a super, super high performance car, and electric motors and hybrid systems give you all that torque from zero speed. So it's great for emissions and it's great for the environment. It's also great. It's great for performance. And if you can build a hybrid or an EV that will sell because people want it for that reason, then you know, that is a worthy goal as well. I think one of the big drivers in that space now is the EU has really tightened up testing regimes and the fleet emissions. There's some huge CO2 savings to be done by car manufacturers over the next 10 years. And, you know, if you do, you're a car manufacturer, you're going to look at your fleet. Which are my worst offenders? They're my high-performance vehicles. What can I do with them? Oh, I could turn all those supercars with really nice margin into electric. The customers want them because they perform really well, and it's going to be a massive benefit to my fleet CO2. So, you know, we're seeing a really, really strong pull from the market for those kind of vehicles, and it's great. It's good fun. Why not?
Yeah. There are some electric startups apart from the obvious Tesla, but there are others, the Chinese ones, Rimac, for instance. They get the headlines, but they also get the investment as well. Hyundai investing in, you know, in Rimac, for instance, to do with the technology under the skin, and that is probably where a company like Avid Technology isn't going to be
for most people listening to this podcast, that's not the badge on the front of the car, but you are, your team are developing some really interesting stuff for all electrics as well.
Yeah, and I mean, we supply a lot of those high profile companies, and I think we've maybe a little bit too conservative in the past, and Mate has done an absolutely fantastic job with Rimac. They built the Concept One, really high profile vehicle, and it was a fantastic showcase for electrification. We've always sort of concentrated on being a little bit behind the scenes. So we supply some major names, really high profile vehicles, but we've never done that kind of big demonstrator supercar kind of thing, which the others have. We've always kind of hidden a little bit. I stayed out of the limelight. You know, I'm an engineer. I don't like that stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not so much out of the limelight with your own podcast, and that is something that you've been doing for many episodes now, because you're very passionate about educating people about the space, and you have some fascinating interviews, some fascinating programs as well. I think people would find it interesting that an engineering company would become a media publishing company, which is effectively what you've done.
Martin, you were my inspiration. And I tell you what it was, actually, in terms of your pitch, you're talking about education and helping more people get into electric vehicles. And that really resonated with me. And we do a lot of speaking at conferences. But the trouble with the conferences, actually, you've got to get there. It's quite expensive and it's a very narrow audience. And, you know, when we do that, it goes down well and we're sharing knowledge and we're helping other people get into electrification and understand the space. Lots of students, lots of graduates coming up to us and listening to those. So we thought, well, you know what, let's put them on a podcast. Why not? You know, if I'm going to speak at a conference, I'll record it. So yeah, some of our podcasts are just where I've been speaking at a conference. We've recorded it and then we put it out for everyone. So we do that always with the event organizer's permission, obviously, and we wait a little bit because it would kill our events. Yeah. Then it's just gone from there and kind of snowballed. And it's all about education around EV powertrain technology. And, you know, that's been our thing for nearly 15 years now. The automotive industry has been my thing for my entire life. So, you know, I am just a massive EV geek, basically. So, yeah, why not? I'm trying to spread that.
Yeah. How was it going from the world of engineering to, like I say, becoming a publisher, a media company, effectively putting your content out there into the world? It's a different thing, isn't it, really?
It was absolutely terrifying. I think the other thing that really gave me a bit of confidence was starting to see some other people speaking publicly who basically weren't that good at it. I think one of the issues that we have is when you watch a movie, you only see the final cut, you know, and you watch the funny outtakes, but we see this very polished thing. We see people, you know, presenting the news and they deliver it perfectly every time, and they're obviously professionals, and that's the standard that you think you have to be at to put stuff out there, which for normal broadcast, where it's really expensive, obviously you do, but then for podcasts and for other things, I started to listen to people, even like Elon Musk, you know, when he's talking publicly, his delivery is not a media person, but it's honest and it's authentic. And actually, I can do that. So I can do rubbish delivery in an honest and authentic way, and no one seems to mind that on a podcast. But I don't think we're going to be called to, you know, Hollywood or the big screen.
Maybe not Hollywood, but Downing Street. Like, that's a good segue, right? That's a good segue. That's a good segue. So I'm meeting you in London today because you've literally just got out of a session in Downing Street, which is home of the Prime Minister, although you weren't with the PM, but you were with some very high-powered people. And how do you get called to the government to educate them, if you like? How does that all come about?
If I'm completely honest, I haven't a clue. Maybe it's my podcast. They've been listening to it. Yeah.
Prime Minister May is a big fan of your podcast. Yeah.
So I think basically the government, despite all of the other stuff going on at the minute, which is very negative and why the PM wasn't there today, on the positive side, the government has been very clear about trying to do an industrial strategy, and electrification of vehicles is a massive part of their industrial strategy. So today's session that I was in was chaired by Greg Clark, and really what they were really interested in was hearing from industry what government is doing that works, what doesn't work, what they need to do in order to help protect. I mean, the automotive industry in the UK is massively important. I think 80 billion was the number it contributes to the economy, tens of thousands of jobs across the UK. So we've got to protect that as vehicles go to electrified powertrain. We make 2.5 million diesel engines, or engines, 2.5 million engines in the UK. You know, that's a lot of jobs. That's a lot of people's whose livelihoods depend on engines. So the government has given credit, had the foresight to recognise that that's a potential threat. So on one hand, we've got this massive threat of electrification coming. What's that going to do? And I should point out, this isn't the first time they've done this sort of thing. So it's not just like, oh, they went in 2019, we need to do something about electrification. Mm-hmm. This has been going for a long time. So there's a threat. There's also the massive opportunity of, okay, so times are changing. We've got this brilliant car industry. It's very, very good. It's luxury vehicles, high performance vehicles, niche products. Mm. How can we help that go to the next level? How can we develop the supply chain? And I guess that's where Avid comes in. We are a really ambitious company. We've grown from a small business. We're now a medium business. And, you know, we've got plans to be a very big business. We want to do it all in the UK. We want to do it through electrification. So we're quite unusual. I think we're quite unusual in Europe in the products and services that we do and our sort of ambition to grow. A lot of companies don't want to do that. Whereas I do, I want to make Avid a $1 billion business. You know, that's, and I think now is a unique opportunity to do that. It's like once in a lifetime. There's so much change in the industry, so much going on that we've got the ability to do that right now, and there's fantastic pull from our customers. So the event today anyway was about what government can do, what it is doing, what's working, what's not working, and they genuinely want to listen. So there was a big group of people there. All the major manufacturers were represented. There was a good number of supply chain people, including Avid. We all got to have our input, have a discussion, and talk about what needs to be done, and the various threats and what people were seeing coming from around the world, and what's happening in China and what's happening in Germany. And that was a really, really interesting session. But yeah, listening government, who would have thought it?
Well, it's fascinating that you are advising government on future strategy, possibly, and future policy, even, maybe. So let's talk about motorsports. Here in the UK, nearly all of the Formula One teams are based here. There's Motorsport Valley down in the south from McLaren in Woking, and you know, Red Bull and Williams and Renault at Enstone. Then you've got Formula E, which is a very different prospect. In the US, you've got sports like NASCAR and IndyCar, which aren't embracing electrification. What role do you think motorsport and electrifying that has in spreading the word about this?
I mean, I started my career in motor racing. Obviously, no electric or hybrid vehicles back then. All fossil fueled, high octane stuff. I kind of fell out of love with motorsport, actually. I know you're a big F1 fan, and I can't watch it anymore. Mm. I just woke up one day. We used a lot of sports car racing, so things like Le Mans, American Le Mans Series, Daytona, this sort of stuff. You've got to be crazy to do that anyway, because the level we were at, you know, you're awake for a couple of days, and if you haven't got absolute passion for what you're doing, it just doesn't work. So I fell out of love with it because I realized it wasn't really about the engineering, and it was all about the marketing. So I think that gets on to your point of, in terms of raising awareness of something, motorsport does get people's attention. And I think what's happened in Formula One with the hybrid powertrains has really got people's attention and brought that sort of technology into the public domain. Formula E, it's got a long way to go, I think, but it's you know, it's the future. And I think the brands are starting to recognize that. It's one of the funny things about, from an engineering point of view, motorsport doesn't really drive the technology. There's a very big emphasis on what's called formula racing. So that means basically controlling the costs through a set formula for the car. So these are the rules by which you have to follow. You can't go outside those rules. F1's put a load of effort in the last few years into minimizing costs. Mm. And a lot of that's in pulling back on the engineering. But electrification, in some ways, can help them deliver high-performance powertrains for lower cost. Mm. So there's been a lot of adaption to that, because initially there was a big cost to get used to it and work out what you do. But in a lot of ways, doing high-performance hybrid powertrains or EV powertrains actually can reduce the cost compared to a regular engine. It gives you the ability to do more stuff. So.
Even then, though, it can be pretty buzzwordy. Like, they can say, oh, no, so-and-so's slowing down. There's a failure of the MGUH. You know, I'm a geek, and I'm like, right, what does that bit do? And so, you know, for the average Sunday afternoon viewer, turn it on, and they're talking about all of the bits that are actually kind of interesting to do with hybrid powertrains. It can get really complicated. So, you know, Formula E with its pure electric motors, there is an argument that actually that's just simple. It's got motors and batteries, and everyone understands that.
Yeah, you wouldn't get, I mean, it's basically it's a scale electrics car.
That's all it is.
But maybe the Formula E car's a little bit too simple at the moment. Mm. So there's some things they can't do a lot. They can't do a lot of regen on those cars. The powertrains are quite simple. The batteries are fairly small. Obviously, then they're on very straightforward tyres. I do think they've got, there's a lot to do. I tell you that actually the championship that excites me most at the moment is the I-Pace series. Mm. I think that's really interesting racing, and in some ways, from a technical point of view, certainly from a driveline point of view, the I-Pace, you've got the all-wheel drive, so you've got motors at the front and motors at the back. You can do more regen braking. You know, it's really interesting formula.
Yeah, we know you can't talk about specific manufacturers, but there was an event recently that BMW put on, the Next conference, where they showed off a 5 Series, and they'd taken out the drivetrain, they'd stuffed it full of batteries in places and motors, and 3 motors, 2 on the back to do some funky things, and they showed that off. And that's really interesting, because they said to the assembled journalists, oh, this isn't, I mean, this will do 10 hot laps, it's got a 30-40 kilowatt hour battery, it's just we wanted to have a play. And that's kind of really interesting, because they let their engineers there just go and play with technology and electric powertrain technology just for the sake of, oh, well, let's go and see how many hot laps we can do. It wasn't about endurance. It was about just using a type of battery chemistry that gave you all of that power. And to that, I was really pleased that BMW showed that off to the journalists, because it was nothing more than just them having a play with technology. But the stakes are so high with all of these big auto manufacturers, I guess, like the general public aren't really exposed to that sort of playtime, if you like. Does that make sense?
I interviewed a guy maybe a year ago, so 6 months ago. He works at Newcastle University now, but in his early career, he worked for Volkswagen. So over 30 years ago, he was playing with electric powertrains at Volkswagen, and they had a whole team, and the job of that team was basically to play around with electric powertrains and see if they were any good. And what they could do with them. The scale of vehicle manufacturers is colossal. And they spend billions. So Daimler, the last diesel engine line that they launched, so just the diesel engines, they spent 3 billion euros on that, just on the engines. So, you know, if to carve off £5 million to have a play here and there actually is not a big thing. But I think one of the interesting things with electric powertrains, once the OEMs have got their heads around them, they have actually realized on high-performance vehicles that it's cheaper to develop a high-performance vehicle with a hybrid or with an electric powertrain than it is with a high-performance internal combustion engine. The problem on the fully electric is the batteries and the range if you're going to really drive it hard. But a high-performance hybrid, because you've got all that torque from the electric motor, it comes in, it's great. So someone like BMW, so I know you were a bit disappointed with what they'd said about diesel engines. But the other thing that they have said as well, not the same guy in a different event, they have said that all of their cars will be mild hybrids. So that's 100%. So whilst they're saying, yeah, we're still going to have engines, yes, but they're going to be highly electrified. And actually the kind of level of mild hybrids that they are talking about, Gen 2 mild hybrids. You've seen Daimler have just launched really, really nice Generation 2 mild hybrid diesel engines. A lot of electrification, even on the basic diesel engines. So yeah, they will still have some. But again, it comes back to, if you can make that work and you can get out in the market, you can get some incremental gains, you know, and it's cost effective and people will buy it and it gets electrified miles on the road, then that, you know, it can only be a good thing. The thing that's driving them is these new, much tougher CO2 reduction targets from the EU. So they've got to have a 37.5% reduction in CO2 by 2030. Wow. I mean, that's massive, given that that's not when they started with the Fleet CO2, they were coming from a pretty low base with old technology. But this is based on 2021, so already like super advanced engines, the best sort of. Wow. So you will see a lot of electrification from the big OEMs as a result of that. And same thing on the truck side. So the trucks have got to do 30% by 2030. And they've already got, you know, every truck has a very advanced, super efficient diesel engine. So the only way you're going to get another 30% efficiency out of that is through a lot of electrification. So this mix of mild hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and fully electric, and making that fit the right applications, it's in some ways it's really complicated because there's more spread there. But we're going to see a lot of that.
In the defense of hybrids, and obviously I, on an EV podcast, I'm always, you know, banging the drum for pure electric cars, but in defense of hybrids, a really good example for why they are a fantastic use of technology would be something like the lap record set at the Nürburgring. So if you go on YouTube, the video, I think it was a Porsche 919 maybe, if you Google that, and this was the ultimate lap record holder of the Nürburgring Nordschleife, and that was a big engine paired with a big hybrid system. So out of the corners you get all of that punch of the electric system, but the energy density of fossil fuels means that the top speed was 300 and something kilometers. Then there's the recent fully charged video, which is amazing, of the VW IDR setting the new lap record for pure electrics. Now, again, that power out of the corners, but the lap time so much slower because the top speed of that, which is the bit that wasn't mentioned in the video and the bit that I'm sure VW don't want, that's not the headline on the press release. The top speed of that VW IDR, really, really slow. And the thing about the Nürburgring, so many long straights, it was topping out at like 100, late 100 and somethings. Whereas the Porsche with the hybrid engine could just keep accelerating and accelerating, accelerating. So there you go. There's my defense of hybrids.
I mean, the Nürburgring, that's... We used to go to the ring all the time, and I sort of roll my eyes a little bit with, oh, God, another lap record attempt at the ring. But it takes a lot of power to go fast. I mean, that's so the power you consume is the square of your speed. So you're going 200-odd miles an hour. You are consuming energy at an alarming rate. So even with a big battery, 100-kilowatt-hour battery, which is heavy and then dynamically quite difficult for the car going around the twisty stuff, you're going to drain that battery rapidly going around the ring if you got any sort of big VMAX going on. So it's definitely getting the energy on the car for one lap of the ring, let alone two or three, because you tend to have to do one... You have to do a lap to then do a hot lap,
right, yeah,
to then have an in lap. Yes. So you need to do three laps basically to do one lap. That's a massive battery for a full EV. So yeah, hybrids. You know, there's a lot in hybrids. I think the complication here is we've got some cities that are saying they want no combustion engine vehicles from quite early dates. That kind of makes it easy in a way because, you know, right, well, we've only got one path. So it's very, very simple. But I don't think the public are quite ready for that for every application. If you live in work in London or in Paris, then fair enough. Public transport and you can probably deal with it. But for people like we live out in the countryside in Northumberland, and it is quite difficult. So we have a full EV. We have a Zoe, new one, with a big battery, which is great. I just the small battery Zoe just wouldn't have worked for us because of the distances that we have to move around, and we've got a plug-in hybrid. We get a lot of electric miles out of the plug-in hybrid. It's a BMW. You know, we've got the longer range of it, which gets used all the time. But we're definitely saving a lot of fuel, not completely eliminating it, but saving a huge amount of fuel, which, you know, again, why not? If we can do that now, then let's do it now.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the show and where we get to, which is working with Avid Technology on this podcast to answer your questions about EVs. So I was racking my brains. Okay, we can't ask you specifics. You can't talk about the specific people you work with, but you do know everything that's happening in all parts of the EV industry. So that brings us to Ask Avid, which is something that I'm really happy that we can do with our listeners, help educate people so they can send me questions at any time on Twitter, on email. I will collate them and then say once a month I don't imagine we'll get to sit down together, but you have a studio, it's fine. You have a microphone that we can sit down and you can answer the questions of the listeners to this podcast. So first of all, thank you for doing that.
No problem. It's really interesting, exciting. I'm a bit nervous about these questions and what they're going to be, so please go easy on us.
So we won't run them past in advance. So we'll ambush you and surprise you. So anything that you've ever wondered about EVs, the technology, performance cars, you know, industrial, you know, plant, then you can drop me a line. You can use the hashtag AskAvid online on Twitter. We'll compile them once a month and then we'll sit down, probably virtually, and go through stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a good bit of market research for the sentiment of the general kind of population.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to see what's going to come in, yeah.
Brilliant. All right, well, get those questions in. I'll be reminding you over the next few days and weeks as well to get those questions in, and then in a few weeks' time, we'll sit down once again. Well, it's been a lovely chat in a pretty stinking hot basement room in London. A good opportunity to sit down and talk, so thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks, Martin. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening again today, and I hope that you're on board with this as well. It's one of the things that I'm really excited about this year. And I think in the next few months, we're going to put together a list of questions that we will then collate, we'll put online, we'll put as a resource on the social channels, on the blog as well. I'd love you to ask me questions that you've always wondered about EVs. Why do we do a certain thing a certain way? What technology is coming? And if it has anything to do with the many different pies in which Avid have their fingers, if that makes at all sense, then they will answer it in the best possible way they can. Again, they have to stay pretty agnostic, can't talk about specific car makers, but that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about this, because we know that there's no bias. They're not trying to sell you, you know, a certain car or anything like that. So send me your questions anytime you want to. I'll start to collate those over the next few weeks and get Ryan back on the show. And if you want to put in the subject header Ask Avid, if you want to use social media, maybe tweet me, use the hashtag Ask Avid, and I'll start to collect those as well as he answers them. Then I'll get them typed up and I'll get them put online as well, so we can always refer back to them. That would be awesome. And let's start to bring all that together. If you'd like to download his podcast, by the way, then if you search in your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Avid Technology, and they have their own podcast series all about educating you about EV technology as well. So go and check that out. Well worth a listen, well worth downloading and subscribing to. In the meantime, get your questions coming in and I'll put them to Ryan the next time we speak. Question of the week, by the way, will be tomorrow on Sunday's show, and I got a couple more answers just to bring into the spreadsheet, and then we will put that out very soon for Sunday's show. Well, you can get every previous show online for free. 519 episodes, if you want to. And lots of interviews, lots of new shows in there as well. All the brand new shows come first and free and automatically to our subscribers, and it's a free subscription as well. So if you'd like to do that, open up your podcast app, hit subscribe, and then get it automatically on YouTube as well. If you want to come and say hi on the socials, search EV News Daily, and we can have a chat online. In the meantime, have a wonderful day. I'll catch you tomorrow, and remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.